pleased to be joined by our NHL insider, Elliot Friedman, back home from Chicago. How now, between covering the playoffs in Nashville, then going to Vegas, and then wrapping things up in Chicago, how's your liver?
It's looking forward to a few weeks at home.
Yeah, I would guess. Looking for a life preserver.
Go to Kijiji, you might find one, Elliot. Apparently you can do that.
Yeah. That's right. We're going to Italy in a month, so it's got to be recovered.
Good for you, man. Yeah. Oh. Yeah, you didn't cold turkey for the next month solid, right? Should we be let down by, cuz I'll be honest, I don't care. But there was all this promise and talk of trades and crazy movement and maybe the most movement ever in a short period of time in the NHL. I don't think we saw it. Maybe it's still coming. But what did you make of the days leading up to Vegas, the expansion draft, and then what we saw on the weekend in Chicago with the draft?
Well, it was quieter than I thought, but there were moments where it was nuts. You know, Friday morning obviously was crazy with the Blackhawks. They made the Hjalmarsson deal, and they made the other trade with
Panarin.
Panarin, and then the Rangers made their deal to move up. And you know, Friday night was a lot quieter than we expected. I think it's the first time that I've covered the draft that there's never been a timeout in the first round. And you know, I know a lot of people didn't like the green room, but one thing it did make was it allowed the first round to go a lot faster. So it was a faster, quieter night than, you know, we've seen. You know, Saturday we had the one big deal that you made, and and yes, it's quieter than that. I think there's a little bit of, I don't know if revenge is the right word, but, you know, Vegas obviously did a really good job of holding a lot of teams hostage in the weeks leading up to the expansion draft, and now teams are kind of trying to get them back a little bit, and they have the leverage, and they're using it with them. And so that's kind of slowing things down. But, you know, I still think I think a lot of people have tried a lot of things. I think it's just it hasn't worked. I think the one thing that really has changed it, too, is that you've got Arizona trying to win this year as opposed to being a place that is, or at least improve. You know, in the past, they've been a place where you kind of stash contracts. And right now, they've said, no, we've got to get a little bit better. So that also slows down the process.
It is interesting. You know, Chalmerson's not a young man. Stepan neither. And Ranta's a guy that you would think a team that wants to win immediately would go get. We didn't expect that, did we?
You know what? I did not see the Hjalmarsson coming. Like that one, when I heard they were making a deal with Chicago, I thought it was initially thought it was for Hossa. So I was surprised. You know, the Ranta Stepan thing had kind of been out there. I didn't realize they were doing it for the number 7 pick until I saw what the actual trade was. But, you know, they were in on Stepan last year, Ryan, and it didn't happen because I think the Rangers needed to do something else and they weren't able to do it. But that's a guy they've kind of looked at. So, you know, I think the one thing is they know they've got 2 years to sell Oliver Ekman-Larsson on staying with that team. They're going to make him the captain. I think OEL had a big hand in getting Hjalmarsson to agree to go there. They're pretty tight, and I think that was an OEL targeted deal as much as anything else. And you know, I do think that they realize that, you know, they haven't made the playoffs for 5 years. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs this year. I think it's going to be really tough, but I think they're going to be better. And they've got a lot of good young players. They've got Max Domi. They've got Clayton Keller, who I think really has a chance to be something. I just think they wanted some pros there. And also I think with Stepan, he can take all those brutal Western Conference matchups, the Kopitars, the Monahans, the McDavids, or the Draisaitls. And I think that way your young players just don't get creamed all the time. So I see Arizona as a team saying, we've got 2 years to make sure that Ekman-Larsson stays. And I think this was part of the process to get there. And I think Ekman-Larsson was very involved in the recruitment of Hjalmarsson.
Elliot Friedman, our guest here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Going to the Hamonic trade, we heard in the hours and I guess, I don't know, 72 hours leading up to it, that Garth Snow wanted two first-round picks. And it's one of those things, it's like, oh, this guy's, you know, that's funny. It sounds crazy. But it was legit. He wanted two first-round picks for Travis Hamonic.
Yes, he did.
How many, and we heard there were a number of teams involved, and in the end, it's the Flames that pay a heavy price. Who else was in, and your thoughts on the trade?
The Leafs were definitely in, and they were a team that they were definitely asking for two firsts. And then I think they talked on Friday about a bigger trade. You know, Garth Snow and Lou Lamoriello had about a seven-minute conversation in front of all the TV cameras on the draft floor. And then I think James Van Riemsdyk came up, and you know, I'm not sure that's something that the Islanders wanted to do, not because of anything against Van Riemsdyk specifically as a player. It's just that they, you know, he's only got one more year, and they have to, you know, kind of clear the decks a little bit right now. And number two is, you know, they've got guys like Ladd and Anders Lee, and I think they kind of felt that they kind of had that skill set served, so they didn't want to go there. Colorado was in on it, but everything I've heard about the Colorado Islander talks is that Colorado was asked for an awful lot, and the Islanders are just not willing to do that. And I think that, you know, other teams are, I think Tampa was definitely around there, but again, that's probably a high draft pick thing. I think what happened with the, first of all, I think that Garth Snow preferred that Hamonic go west. I think if all things were equal, you know, Hamonic was a good Islander for a long time, a very popular player. I think if all things were equal, Garth was going to try to send him to Western Canada, closer to home. I do think that was a factor, even though, you know, and I think the other thing too was if there was a prospect that the Islanders wanted, I, from what I understand, the Flames did not want to lose that player. And at the end of the day, Calgary got the draft pick instead of the player, and I think they were very happy with that. One thing that I'm going to look into over the next little while is, you know, I'm with you, like, you hear this, you say, oh, my, a first and 2 seconds, and you're like, that's a big price. You know, one thing that there's some guys out there doing right now, and I'm going to reach out to a couple of them over the next few days, is, you know, how much a draft pick is really worth. You know, what is a draft pick, what is a second-round pick really worth? You know, if Calgary has the year it should have, you're hoping that pick is going to be somewhere between 50 and 62. So what is a 50 or 60 second-round pick really worth? And I think that, and I know, and I know that the Flames were going through that. They were sitting there as they were grinding with Garth Snow. They're sitting there saying, okay, what's this pick worth? What's that pick worth? What's the chances that we lose a player here that is going to be an NHLer for a long period of time? And I think, you know, the one thing draft picks do, and this is what's good for the Islanders, is it allows you the flexibility to do things, and it also gives you the ability to at least have more lottery balls in play. I think, you know, if you're the Flames, you're sitting there, you feel bad for your scouts because they're going to have less bullets to fire, but you sit there and you say, okay, we've got this guy who's a top 4D. We've got to look at McDavid and Dreisaitl, and we feel a lot better about our chances of going up against them.
Before the offseason started, the Flames likely had a certain number they'd budgeted for a starting goaltender and a number 4 defenseman. They get it done for 8, and I wonder if that leaves them a little more money to spend than they thought they'd have, because they get Arizona to eat some money and Hamonic's on a very team-friendly deal.
Yeah, you know, and that is one of the reasons that Hamonic's price was so high. You know, you've got 3 more years of under $4 million. You're not going to find that in free agency. So there is no question that that was part of the factor. Yeah, I think you feel pretty good. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Tree Living's not done tinkering. I mean, basically the Calgary Flames have sent a message that our window is opening, and we're in go-for-it mode. And, you know, I think when you're in that situation, you're always looking like, what's the extra 2% I can add? What's the extra thing I can get? And, Ryan, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he's still looking out there.
Do you agree with that sentiment, Elliot, that the window's open and they've got a chance? Because some will say they just missed the playoffs 2 years ago and they were swept in round one.
That's silly. This is a totally different team now. This is a different team now. And it's also a different division. I mean, you know, you've got Vegas and you've got Arizona, and those teams are not, you know, I mean, I mean, I think you're silly to count on anybody right now. But Vegas and Arizona, Vegas, you'd be surprised if they made the playoffs. Arizona is trying to turn it around, but they're still a ways away. You know, San Jose is going to be interesting. I think they've got, it sure sounds like they've got long-term extensions done or close to done with Martin Jones and Mark Edward Vlasic. And that leaves you Thornton and Marlowe and what's going on there. And you know, LA obviously is in a bit of a turn. We don't know exactly where they are, and I still think San Jose's good, but if they don't have those two guys or one of those two guys, they're going to be different. So you're looking at Edmonton, you're looking at Anaheim, who I still think is really good, and you're there. And I do think that the window is opening for Calgary. I mean, you know, and everybody's signed. Like, if you look at the next few years, the only guy you've got to deal with is Backlund, who's important, no question about it. But generally, your core is signed for a long time. And I think you have to go for it when you have these opportunities. And I think Calgary is now in we're-going-for-it mode, and I think their window is opening. I think the Flames are a real good team, and I think it's going to be fascinating to watch the top of that Pacific Division for years to come.
You know, it's kind of a sidebar a little bit, but if you look around the league, if you're a Flames fan, the one thing you have to give your GM is that he has the conviction to do a deal. There are a lot of teams out there, probably their fan base is like, where's our GM? What's he doing? Treliving makes deals. For better or worse, he is out there constantly trying to do something to make his team better.
Well, this is not a job for people with small ones. You have to have the courage of your conviction, and you have to have the willingness to do things. Now, but the thing is, I think as a GM, you have to have both. You have to have the willingness to strike when you feel, but you also have to have the willingness to be patient and play the long game. In the salary cap world, especially one that's kind of tightening up now like the NHL's is, you have to have the ability to play the long game. And if you look what he's doing, he's got a number of goalie prospects, he's got a number of D prospects, and he just fought hard to keep one of them from the Islanders. That says to me that he's doing both, that he's got a short game and a long game in mind. And I think when you're a general manager, you have to think both ways. You have to be able to think long term, or you're really going to fail. And I think he's got an ability to do that. I think the other thing, too, is you're right. Is he's got Hamilton. He's got Hammond at the last 2 years. He's given up on picks. And I think that's a very difficult thing to do in this day and age. But I really believe that you cannot be afraid of what people are going to say about you. The best general managers are people who are like, okay, I know this might be unpopular, or I know that I know that people are going to criticize me, but I've got to do it because I think this is right. And, you know, I think the one thing I think is he's kind of growing into the role in the sense that I think every time whenever you're a first-time GM and the first time that criticism really bites you, and he went through a lot last year with Goodrow because it was a long contract dispute that finally got solved late, and people were on the other side of the arguments. I think what it does is once you go through that meat grinder, and if you come out of it alive, I think it strengthens you. Plus, also, he went through a contract dispute this year where I don't think he knew if he was coming back. And so I think all of that kind of just toughens your hide and gets you ready to go. If you get through that, I think it really makes you better at your job. And I got the sense he was very confident and what he was trying to negotiate with the Islanders. But from what I understand on both sides, that was one grind of a contract conversation. I think both of them were glad it was over. I saw Garth walk over at the draft to Keith Tkachuk, who he knows really well, and he was like, thank God that's over. It was pretty funny.
Chicago, it does not seem like Joel Quenneville is happy with what's happened. He may not have even been prepared. What's happening behind the scenes with the Blackhawks?
Well, I think he was mad. I mean, everybody saw him leave the coaches' clinic or the coaches' meeting on Friday morning when the two trades were announced. He was really angry. Then he didn't show up at the draft on Friday night. And I even think Kane and Taves were a little bit shell-shocked when they heard what happened. I think in Chicago, you know, not winning the Stanley Cup in 2 years is a big deal. And I think the one that Quenneville was at the draft on Saturday. He was there. We're all looking for him, and we saw him. But I think the one that probably got Quenneville stunned was the Jalmerson. Quenneville loves Jalmerson, and I think that Jalmerson is one of the more underrated players in all of the NHL. And I you know, I'll tell you this. I don't know if he'll ever get Hall of Fame consideration, but I think he's that good. And I'll tell you something else. The guys who play against him see him at that level, too. He can play both sides of the ice, including his off wing, and he plays it pretty well. He's a guy who plays through a lot of pain. Like if you were to ask players about defensemen they respect who, or players they respect who don't get a lot of attention, I think Jalmerson would be incredibly high on that list. And so I think that's the guy that they're kind of, that Quenneville was upset to lose. Now, it's been a tough ride for him in Chicago. You know, his lieutenant, Mike Kitchen, was let go, and he admitted he wasn't happy about that. So, you know, I think obviously there's some divisions there, and we'll see where we go. Now, I had some people say some really good things to me about Connor Murphy. I admit he's not a guy I've watched a ton, but, you know, we'll see. And, we'll see. It's going to be a different situation from him. He's going to go from no pressure to pressure, and you're always curious to see how a guy handles that. But again, I did have some people who had really positive things to say about him. We'll see, but Quenneville clearly was not happy.
I find it tough to look at these two moves and say that they aren't thinking long term. I don't know that they're a better contender.
I think they're definitely thinking that. There's no question about that.
That's the first time we've seen that under Stan Bowman, isn't it, since they won their first cup?
Yeah, it probably is, although they've always kind of, you know, they've always, you know, they've signed a lot of their guys to long-term deals. You know, obviously, Kane and Taves got them. Keith got a 12-year one, and that might be the best contract in the most team-friendly contract in the NHL. Hossa got a long one. Sharp got a long one before they traded him. Seabrook got a long one. So they have thought that. I mean, to me, one of the more interesting teams in the league right now is Columbus. I mean, they have basically said to everybody, we are all in for the next 2 years. And that Metropolitan Division, which was a tough division last year, I mean, Washington, Columbus, Pittsburgh, you know, the Rangers are interesting. They're going through a bit of a change. But, you know, you've got Washington, you've got Columbus, you got Pittsburgh, you got Philly, who's pretty interesting. You got the Islanders, who now have some bullets to fire. You know, we saw how those three teams, how competitive they were at the top of the Metro last year. And boy, it's going to be like that again. And Columbus is sending, and I think Columbus is out for looking for one more score. I think they're hanging around Kovalchuk. I think they're going to try to see if they can get someone else, and then they'll circle back on him. I think Columbus is sending a message that they're going for the Stanley Cup the next 2 years, big time.
What's the vibe in Colorado if they return to camp and all those big names are still there? That group that didn't work together has not been broken up yet.
Well, I think it's interesting. I mean, I think Duchesne's agent, Pat Brisson, is pretty frustrated. I'm sure Duchesne is frustrated, too. You know, Colorado's asks have been very big from what I've been told. And, you know, I think locally they feel this is not a deal they can, quote-unquote, lose. And other teams are saying, okay, well, we'll try to force them to sell low. So if they, I can't see it happening. I see it as a lot of posturing instead of anything else there, Ryan. But I just, right now we're sort of in the okay, like, you know, who's got the big ones here? Who can stand up the longest?
What did you make of both, and I know we're kind of running on you here, but in St. Louis, they make the trade for Shen, and then they wheel out Ryan Reeves. Two interesting trades.
First.
Well, you know, I think the Shen is an interesting player because if you play on that Philadelphia first power play, it's generally pretty lethal. And, that's going to help St. Louis's power play a lot. You know, he's a good player. I'd love to see him be better at 5-on-5, and maybe he gets the opportunity there. And but, you know, I like Shen. You know, the Reeves thing, I have a lot of theories on it. You know, first of all, Jim Rutherford goes out, he wins two Stanley Cups in a row, and everybody's killing him for this deal. Like, does nobody get, like, a grace period?
No.
Say, maybe this guy knows what he's doing.
It's 2017. Absolutely not.
Oh, my God. This guy's just won two Stanley Cups in a row. What a moron.
Yeah, what an idiot.
You know, I have a couple of thoughts about Reeves. You know, I know a lot of people didn't. I didn't watch a ton of Minnesota, St. Louis in the first round because the five Canadian teams were in. But I watched all of Minnesota, Nashville, or St. Louis, Nashville in the second round. You know, Ryan Reeves is a 10 to 12 minute a game player. He's not bad. Like, he had a lot of good shifts. Like, there were times in that series where he was St. Louis's best player. Now, that tells you why Nashville won in some ways, but I saw a lot out of him. Like, I was looking at him saying, there's more here than he gets credit for. Now, he committed some dumb penalties, and Pittsburgh is going to have to work on him about that. But, you know, like, he throws a tough forecheck. And, you know, everybody gets caught up in this fighting thing. Look, you know, and what fighting is going out of the game. We all know that. But intimidation is still a very big part of it. And the other thing, too, is, and I have a theory on this. Phil Jackson, before he decided to ruin the New York Knicks, he always talked about in Chicago about you bring in somebody new who becomes a popular player, and it gives people incentive to win because they want to win for that guy. Like, even Jordan would talk about guys who'd never won before. And if he liked them and they became good teammates, he was like, he used his motivation to win for that guy. And Glenn Sather was a big believer in that. He always said, you always bring in someone new, even if you win. And I don't think guys like Rutherford or other GMs are over these kinds of mind games. Like, I'm not surprised at all. First of all, I do believe when he says he wants the intimidation there, and we can all argue about protection from here until the world ends and whether it works or not. But I also have a theory that it's about you bring in popular guys because it's easy to say we've won two in a row or, you know, we're exhausted. I wouldn't be surprised if there's something to the mind game of here's a new player, everyone's going to like him, and like Phil Jackson used to say, it gives your players motivation. You know what? Let's win too so this guy can share the feeling. That's just my theory I have.
Sure. Well, thanks for this. We've been looking already at the lists for UFA July 1. I'm not sure what there is to be bought on July 1. There will be purchases made, but it sure feels like these trades are having so much more impact than any free agency signing on July 1 might have.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to that. There's no question. I mean, I still think, you know, the interesting ones will be the Shattenkirks and the Alsners and, you know, where's Radulov and all of this. You know, I think one of the more interesting guys is going to be Joe Thornton. I really do. He's quiet for now. We'll see what his feelings are. But, you know, it sounds like there are teams out there who are reaching out to him. I think Nashville would be one. I wouldn't be surprised if Toronto was one. You know, Mike Babcock's got history there, both the Olympics and the World Cup. You know, I don't know what Lou Lamoriello's going to think of that beard, but, you know, I'm very curious to see. To me, the most intriguing guy is going to be Joe Thornton. Does he go back to San Jose, or does he try to taste the world somewhere else? And Joe Thornton is a really independent, free-thinking guy, and I'm really fascinated to see what he's going to do.
Last one, and I'm sorry, we're keeping you way late. Vegas still has 12D.
You guys always abuse it, so I'm good. I'm good.
Like, it's because you're this. So great
you're
at this.
You're so bloody good.
You're
Elliot.
So great.
So good. A dozen D is too many. When does this loosen up for
you? Mullenberg, you cheap guy. You're just trying to weasel the dollars per minute down. With
that's right.
Question.
Yeah, the meter's ticking.
Keep going. What's up, Ryan?
12D in Vegas. That's way too many. When do they start to move?
Well, I think they tried to move Mathot already. You know, Montreal did try to convince him to waive last week, and I heard it was really tough. It was a difficult call, but he said no. You know, I think kind of teams are kind of doing to Vegas what Vegas did to them. Like, okay, now we've got the leverage, so we'll see. I think you can never have enough D. So I think guys are going to be out there.
Thanks, appreciate it, and we'll call you Friday.
No, you're not. I'll tell you why. I saw Kerr at the draft.
We'll call you Thursday. We'll call you Wednesday.
No. This is the last one for you. Doing Kerr later this week, and I'm gonna do Kerr later, and then we're done. So yeah, have a great summer, boys.
We'll call you Friday. And
you can call, but I'm telling you right now, was he not moaning? Answering.
Was Kerr moaning at the draft?
It's the last.
He was not moaning. He just asked if it would be possible, and I said yes.
So you're screwing us then.
I'm doing you guys Monday, and I'll do him later in the week.
Well, hang on now. Because Friday is the 30th, right before July 1, and then we're done.
We need you there.
No, but these are the gratis ones, aren't they?
They're what?
These. you're working radio. You know what gratis means.
No. I mean, you fire it through, buddy.
What's that?
You fire it through. You.
Oh, I thought these ones were over because I don't hear the ad.
Well, still, right. We're still paying.
People are still listening.
All right. Okay. Well, then.
Now I've got a meeting at 9, but that's fine.
No. In all seriousness, I said to Rob I would do him once before the end of the year. So we'll work this out.
So we'll talk to you Saturday.
Yeah. Or sure Sunday. You will.
We'll talk to you Friday.
All right, boys. Take care.
Thanks, Alan.
Have a great week. Yeah.
Elliot Friedman brought to you by Hoogie Boogie.
That's what it takes, 2018's right? 2018's coming in soon.